Good morning and welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable. My name is Emily Winicky and I'm the Community Engagement Coordinator here at Syracuse University. I would like to begin, as we do with all Syracuse University events, by acknowledging with respect the Onondaga Nation, firekeepers of the Haudenosaunee, the indigenous people on whose ancestral lands Syracuse University now stands. I also want to draw your attention to our updated schedule for this month. It is on our calendar. I also printed off copies in the back, and we'll be sending out an email. So next week, we'll be hearing about the Near West Side Initiative with the new executive, executive director, Gregorio Jimenez. I am now honored to introduce this morning's speaker, Amid Turner. Amid brings a wide range of skills to his position of the Say Yes Syracuse Scholarships Director. As a former counselor, violence prevention educator, career transition specialist, and therapist, Amid has extensive experience in assessing needs and developing programming and response plans to meet those needs, along with his community outreach and background as an educator. Prior to his current position with Say Yes, he has also served as a Say Yes program coordinator, site director, and scholarship director. He is a graduate of University in Pennsylvania with a BA in psychology and holds a master's degree in marriage and family therapy from Syracuse University. Currently, Amid is a student at the University of Notre Dame in the Mendoza School of Business for Executive Nonprofit Administration. Please join me in welcoming Amid Turner.
Good morning, you all. Good morning. You all look very vibrant. I'm not a coffee drinker, but I can tell that coffee is important to a lot of you, so I'm glad it's here. What I am going to do is talk to you all about the evolution of Say Yes to Education in Syracuse and where we are now. And throughout this discussion, I was, you know, I'd asked Emily, should I do a presentation? And she said, and I thought, I would like this to be more of a discussion rather than me just, you know, talking. I do that a lot. So here we go. Say Yes to Education, the seed was planted really in 2007. So our CEO at the time, Mary Ann Schmidt, was new to Say Yes to Education, the organization. And at that particular time, we were working with students in cohorts in Philadelphia, Harlem, and Hartford, Connecticut. And so in those cohorts, the people that we were working with were like pseudo parents to students. So the idea of, and I'll talk about this soon, wraparound supports kind of spawned from that. So in Philadelphia, we were working with a couple of schools, and in those schools, we were working with a limited number of students, about 200 in total. I'm going to digress just for a second. This came from our founder, George Weiss. While he was at the University of Pennsylvania, he was volunteering at the local Boys and Girls Club in Philadelphia. I can't remember what side. I think it was West Philly. And he formed a connection with a group of students there. He bumps into them some 10 years later. And, you know, life took a turn for all of them. And in his discussions with them, he asked if they had gone to college. They made promises to him that they would go to college and things like that. And in those discussions he had with them, each of them said they wanted to go to college, but they didn't have the money to pay. So he makes a promise to them that if they get accepted into college, he'll pay for their colleges. That's how Say Yes to Education starts. So I digress just for a second. Now let's go back up to 2007. We are in the cohort chapters. We work with students in Philadelphia, Harlem, and Hartford. And at that particular time, the organization was thinking about how can we have more impact? How can we have further reach? How can we level the playing field for students in urban areas? So the organization went about seeking out a community that had all the right ingredients to really think about big impact. And she meets with the former chancellor, Nancy Cantor, and there's a saying I learned, I love this saying, there's nothing new under the sun and there's nothing old over the moon. And over the moon, our former CEO and Nancy Cantor have wine, and they're talking about how they can impact the community. They begin discussing Say Yes to Education and, you know, what they're looking to do. And the chancellor says, well, Syracuse is ripe for that kind of impact. We have all the ingredients. We have leaders that are ready to do something different. And so they begin talking about Say Yes to Education. When Say Yes to Education started in 2008, we started with, we rolled out in specific cohorts. And we started with, one, the premise that students needed more enrichment learning, right? And there's research to support that everywhere. Students that have extracurricular activities perform better academically. They perform, their soft skills are better, they know how to interact with people, and they are more resilient. Their dropout rates are like zero, and they complete their degree programs once they get to college. So that's how we started. We started with enrichment programming, which I guess back then was really called after school programs. We called it enrichment programming, extended day learning, because we wanted those programs to be part of the school day. We didn't want to be just an after school program. And they were fabulous. They were fabulous. At that particular time, there were only four high schools, Corcoran, Fowler, Nottingham, and Henniger. By the way, I'm a Nottingham grad. I won't say what year, 95. We rolled out in cohorts. The first cohort was the Corcoran Quadrant. And then I started in 2009, and I was part of the Fowler Quadrant. And the enrichment programming was fabulous. When we started with seed funding, and that was channeled through Say Yes to Education. So all of us were employees of Syracuse University by way of Say Yes to Education, and all of the programming came through Syracuse University. And I have to say the enrichment programming was fabulous. When I was at Salem Hyde, we had fencing, we had a chess club, and we had, it was a robotics club with Legos. It was fabulous. I loved it. I would have loved to do fencing in third grade. Probably, I don't know, I like Star Wars, so I would have been too much, but anyway. So we start with that, and then the other thing about Say Yes when we started was there were two people in each building. So I started as a coordinator, and my primary responsibilities were for enrichment programming. And then we also had site directors. And so the site directors mainly were placed in schools to be an asset to that particular school. The thing is, at that time, we didn't have specific responsibilities. So we placed agents in each of the schools, and we really said, go in there and help the administrators do whatever it is they need to do for school improvement. In some cases, you know, they fit right in and whatever else. And in other cases, when you don't have a clear definition of what you're supposed to do, it just makes it really, really hazy. So there were some principals that were like, well, what? I don't understand what this person is here to do. I asked them to do something, and they say, I don't do that, and, you know, whatever. So that was kind of bumpy, right? Wasn't bumpy for me, but it was bumpy in other places. That evolves into what are now family support specialists. So right around 2013 and 2014, our partners, and I have to give them a lot of credit, Onondaga County, the City of Syracuse, Syracuse Teachers Association, the CNY Community Foundation, have been grappling with how can we provide wraparound supports to all students at scale? How can we provide mental health services to all students? How can we sustain legal clinics? And that's something else I didn't mention. And I'll come back to it, but there's tenets to Say Yes and there's a theory of change. So right around that time, they engineered, which is the first of its kind really in New York State, family support specialists. The rationale for that at that particular time with the former county executive, Joni Mahoney, was we can look at our costs and spend them up front to prevent spending what we would do on the back end in all types of supports for students and families. And there was some research to show that if you are proactive rather than reactive, you save on the back end. So we developed family support specialists. These folks are in schools now. They're in all the schools. There's two in each. There is a family support specialist that works with directly with students, and then there's a family support specialist that works with that student's family. The rationale with that is that you can help a wounded fish heal, but if you don't clean the water, when you put him back in the water, he's just gonna get sick again. So those family support specialists have a caseload. Students are identified through what Syracuse has in each school is called a SIT team. That's the student intervention team. The Syracuse City School District identifies students through a tiered system. There's a four-tier system. The first tier is interventions go out to all students. The second tier is students that are not necessarily showing risky behavior but are not necessarily thriving. The third tier is a little risky, and that fourth tier is that's the high flyer. So for family support specialists, where we want to have the greatest impact is not on the first tier, because that includes everybody. It's really on the second tier, right? Of course, the students that are high flyers and in that third tier, they're going to get supports. But students in the second tier really have potential to thrive, right? All of the students, well, let me reword. All of the students have potential to thrive. But it's much like if you all are familiar with like Lemoyne Upward Bound and programs like that, they want to get students that are performing okay and get them to the next level. So that is what's currently happening now. So now I'm going to go, what I said I would talk about just a minute ago is what our theory of change is. So when Say Yes goes into a community, by the way, we're in four communities now. We're in Syracuse, Buffalo, Cleveland in Guilford County. We just launched in Cleveland this year. We have a theory of change, and there's tenets to that change. One, the first and foremost is to level the playing field, financial impact. And that's where the scholarships come in. We want to level the playing field for all students, and guaranteeing tuition is something that levels the playing field. And there's another thing, at least in our community, we have a lot of great things going on, and there's people making great efforts to make sure our, that's my friend T-Li, she's awesome, to make sure that students have opportunities, and that's guaranteeing tuition. And I should say, I would be remiss if I didn't say Syracuse University. We have a college compact of over 120 colleges all over the country. We partner with the entire SUNY and CUNY school district. Syracuse University has been our champion higher ed institution. They've led the charge on that from day one, and they continue to be. We have over 100 Seiya scholars at Syracuse University right now. And just last year, Syracuse University's contribution to their guaranteeing tuition for them was over $5 million. And it has been for many years. So their commitment to Syracuse City School District students is there. So we have that throughout the country and with the SUNY and CUNY schools. That's the first tenet, right? If you get accepted, your tuition will get guaranteed. And by the way, I would have to say, I have to say this to you all. I'm going to go over it really quick, but tuition does not cover everything. And I would also say that, I'll just be candid with you all. I think a mistake that we made in launching this is saying free college. So for those that not have been to college before, you might think tuition is the end all be all, and it's not. So we've kind of been changing that and saying making college more affordable. You all know if you want to, depending on if you want to eat twice a day or three times a day, meals are going to be a cost. And if you want to sleep in a bed and they're not even that comfortable, that's going to be a cost too. Okay? So the second tenet is a legal. So when we first started, there were legal clinics strategically that were strategically placed in certain schools. Because you all know this, it's no secret, our population is very transient. You all may have seen about 3 years ago, there was an article on Syracuse.com or in the paper about homelessness. And homelessness there aren't people sleeping out in the streets, but homelessness as in a portion of students in the Syracuse City School District did not have a permanent residence. They were living with friend or grandma or aunt or uncle or whatever the case. So with the legal clinics, we wanted to help and support students and families that were having simple legal issues like landlord-tenant issues, custody issues, anything that gets in the way of the student being in class, participating in class. The third tenet is social-emotional. That's where family support specialists come in. And actually, when we first rolled out with the seed funding that we had, we also ramped up social workers in all of the schools. But with social-emotional support, students that are showing risky behaviors, the belief for us and the belief in the theory of change is that if a kindergartner or a first grader, third grader, whatever, is displaying risky behaviors, there's a reason for the behavior. They're not just a naughty student. And so having more social workers in the schools and now family support specialists, we can help target those students and get them supports. Through the fabulous work of our partners, again, Onondaga County, the City of Syracuse, the Central New York Community Foundation, Syracuse University, Syracuse Teachers Association, there are now mental health clinics in all of the schools. I think they're in all the schools except two high schools, and they're coming to two high schools very soon. This is huge. First of its kind in New York State. First of its kind in New York State. Students that need some sort of mental health support can get that. The facility is a person in each of the schools. They can get that support right there in the school. Used to be that to get that support, student would leave school, and depending on their family, they could leave school and family drives them to mental health clinic, or they could leave school and take public transportation. They're one, losing time in the classroom, and they're two, to pull a student out and then reintegrate them into a classroom is not, you don't just plop them back in there and they're all the way 100% ready to go. So having a mental health clinic in each of the schools, one, cuts down the amount of time that a student is out of a classroom, and there's something in each of the schools called a promise zone specialist who can help that student get out of the class, and then transition back into the class successfully. And it's working. It's working. There's a lot of variables that go into, referrals have gone down dramatically. There's a lot of stuff that goes into why students are no longer getting a bunch of referrals. I would like to believe that what the school district implemented a couple of years ago, which is called restorative justice, is actually working. And I would also like to believe that for students that need that type of support, they can get it right there. The other thing about having a mental health professional in each of the schools is they are there and they do that, but they can also, if a student is really struggling, that person is there to help them de-escalate, right? So that was the third, or was that the fourth? Are you all paying attention? fourth is what I talked about earlier, and that's the enrichment learning, right? So those are the tenets to the theory of change. When we go into each community, those are the things that we work on. And in each community, it looks very, very different. Syracuse was the first Say Yes to Education community-wide partnership. So we're kind of the foundation upon which these other communities have been built. But so we go in with that. We are now in Buffalo. I think Buffalo is able to kind of learn a lot from Syracuse and build their partnership differently. The tenants are still there. They do have family support specialists. The way that they've put together the funding to support that is different. And which I should say also, in Syracuse, all of these supports are all completely locally supported and sustained, which means that they'll be around for as far as we can see. I'll just go out on a limb and say that the partners were really, really innovative about thinking about putting together braided funding to support this stuff. So it gets supported. I remember a while ago, the city of Syracuse would make contributions to Say Yes, and I would get this question all the time. Well, if the city is giving, whatever, they would think that that's going towards the scholarships, and it wasn't. It was actually going to support all of the services that are happening in the schools. So there's funding that comes from the city of Syracuse, there's funding that comes from Onondaga County, there's funding that's pulled down from the state, and there's funding that's pulled down from the federal government to support this stuff, right? And I couldn't tell you the model. I don't know the model, but I know that they weave it all together and it works. And it's been working since 2015. So, and the agreement that Say Yes came to Syracuse with and with all the communities is that we start with seed funding and we wane that seed funding over time, over the period of 5 or 6 years. And as we wane, the community partners take more and more responsibility of the supports. With us, it was more than 6 years. In 2015 is when the community partners took full control of all of that stuff and supported it. And part of the agreement that Say Yes to Education has with the community partners is that all students in the Syracuse City School District will continue to have access to our college compact should they maintain all the supports that are happening in the theory of change. So we wind down in 2015, and then our main focus becomes expanding the college compact, adding more colleges locally in Syracuse. It's making sure all the right students are getting the right amounts to guarantee tuition once they get to college. We do that. We are also continuing to work with all of our community partners on I guess the next level or the next saga in this whole thing is, it's not just about getting students ready for college. It's about making ripe the conditions for access. And I'm glad TLI is here because On Point for College has been doing that for many years. And then also supporting students while they're in college to help them complete a degree. So there are many variables that go, well, you all know this. I mean, students get to college, they don't always finish, and it's not because they're not ready. There's a bunch of things that get in the way. So we're continuing to do that. At the moment, we're all, Syracuse is a fabulous place in that it's big enough to be a city, but small enough to know everyone. So with all the access organizations that are in town, we all work together to help students. We have a data sharing agreement with On Point for College. We share a lot of students. So what we do with them is we'll let them know. We give them a roster of what students' awards are. And for students that are, we do have student responsibilities. And for students that are maybe struggling academically, we share information with them so that they can go and help support students that are struggling. All right, so now let's get to the eligibility criteria, which was developed by the partners and was developed by, at the time, was our scholarship board. So when we were thinking about how to get the population that was called the suburban flight back into Syracuse, and when we thought about that for the eligibility, I wasn't part of these discussions, but I'm familiar with them. At the time, there was a thought that students should be in high school all 4 years to take advantage of the tuition guarantee. And at that particular time, there was also a thought that, well, once we announce this thing, we want to give some families the opportunity to move back into the city and take advantage. So our eligibility criteria is that you have to be in one of the Syracuse City School District high schools for 3 years. And then you have to be a resident of Syracuse at the time of graduation, and you have to be a resident of Syracuse at the time that you enroll. So that was one criteria. That's kind of two bundled in one. You have to be a resident, you have to be in the district for at least 3 years and graduate. The other part is, and this is not anything new, we are a last dollar scholarship, and get this. The New York State is fabulous, we love them. They launched the Excelsior Scholarship a couple of years ago. It could be a game changer for New York State residents. So this is actual legalese, no lie. We're a last dollar scholarship. Excelsior is a last dollar scholarship. So what that means for us is students have to complete what's called a free application for federal student aid. They go to school in New York State, they have to complete tuition assistance program application, that's TAP. And then once those are applied, and if the institution is also providing the student with institutional aid that goes towards tuition, we consider that, and whatever the balance on tuition is after we've applied that towards tuition is what we cover. Excelsior is last in that they look at everything except for loans. But they look at scholarships, grants, whatever, and then if there's a balance after you've exhausted all of the other supports you're gonna get, that's when they kick in. So basically, for Syracuse City School District students, if you're taking advantage of our tuition guarantee, you're not going to get Excelsior. Because we guarantee tuition, right? And we come in before them. That could be advantageous for students. The Excelsior scholarship is a little more rigorous. There's more teeth to it. With ours, it's not as tough. I can't think of the right word right now. I was having a brain fart. There you go, see? Thank you very much. Does not have as many requirements. So in Syracuse, everything that's part of the theory of action is continuing to happen. We also, in 2015, the partners, along with many of others, I believe it's 2014, the governor launched a competition, so to speak, for what is now called the Upstate Revitalization Initiative, URI. And the partners wrote a big, audacious plan to position Syracuse to thrive economically. And part of that plan, everyone knows, education has to be in there. And so in their proposal, they wrote a proposal for what's called Syracuse College Promise. You all know that we were awarded the Upstate Revitalization Initiative, and in there was a slice for our endowment that was $20 million. And if you recall, in 2015, the former county executive announced that we, or was it 2016? All right, 2016, excuse me. Our former county executive announced that we had reached our goal for the endowment. Let me just say, one, that we really started that endowment from scratch. So when we were guaranteeing tuition for students, initially that was coming from the Say Yes to Education endowment. And we went about the business of developing a local endowment that would roll over itself year over year and support students for as long as college. I mean, you know, I don't know. College is getting more and more expensive, but as it is right now, if it stays relatively the same, we'll be able to support students for many, many years. SRC, around about 2010, makes an announcement that they have a $5 million matching grant. So every dollar we raise, up to $5 million, they'll match it. We met that goal in 2015, and then in 2016, the goal for the endowment was about $30 million. And when the former county executive announced that we had met the goal, we got the $20 million from the state. So we now have an endowment that will be able to support students for a long time should the Community Foundation continue to make the right investments. I've done a lot of talking. I don't know where I am on time, but if you all, I would love to take questions. Excellent.
I'm Aggie Lane. I'm from the Urban Jobs Task Force, and we've been working with the city and Center State on Syracuse Build. And they are trying to come up with a way to make sure that there are pathways, career pathways in the trades. And so we did some investigating, and there's a lot of successful adult programs in BOCES that do HVAC, do welding, and all. Someone in BOCES sent me the success rate after one of their years, where 70 people who took four of these courses, which cost almost $1,000, all of them were got jobs with either contractors or the unions. And there's sort of a desperate need for that. Only about 20%, a little over 20%, were city residents. So what I'm suggesting, because Syracuse Build would like to figure out how do you fund this kind of training, we're suggesting that if somebody comes out of the CTE programs of the school and then wants to further that, to pay for that, and one suggestion was with Say Yes, and as I understand it, Onondaga County, OCC, is thinking of a non-credit HVAC course spring of 2020. So the person, Mike Meitzer, told me that they're so desperate for HVAC-like technicians. So these are fairly good jobs.
Yes, they are.
So you get the question.
Is there any
way to bend the rules a little bit so that it's not just college credit?
Yes. So we have a scholarship council that kind of governs the policy. A couple of years ago, we took in a couple of inquiries like that. The pathway that you suggested was the pathway that we discussed. There are courses, if a student is enrolled at OCC and OCC can classify them as a full-time student, we don't, the courses and whatever else, we don't look at that stuff. So I can tell you for sure that we've supported students that have gone to OCC for a credential, but that wasn't necessarily an associate's degree. So that could be a pathway for students, let's say pursuing HVAC, right? They could go to Onondaga Community College. BOCES is not part of our college compact right now. And there's other higher ed institutions. We've gotten inquiries about Continental. I can't remember the Continental. There's other for-profit institutions that are not part of it. It gets really, really tricky. So one way that we measure impact is we look at National Student Clearinghouse data. National Student Clearinghouse is the premier organization that measures high school to college matriculation and college matriculation and college completion. And for the higher eds that they look at, they don't, like BOCES and these other institutions wouldn't qualify as that. And also, students have to be what's called Title IV eligible. So if they're at one of those institutions, they have to be eligible to receive federal grants. So it gets kind of tricky, but one pathway is to go to OCC, and there's other schools that offer. I know Cayuga offers, I don't know if it's HVAC, but certificate degree programs, things like that. I would suggest that would be the pathway.
I'm curious to how many people, young people, a year are being in school on a Say Yes scholarship. And number two, I thought there was an income level and you didn't mention that.
There is. Thank you. So first question, last year there were 1,036 in school. Each year, new students entering fluctuates between 450 and 500 students. That's a little over half of the students that are Say Yes, I should say. So that's a little over half of the students that are graduating. We've examined National Student Clearinghouse data over the past 6 years. About in between 62 and 64% of students that graduate matriculate to college. I will say in 2015, the Syracuse City School District saw the highest jump in graduation rates, and that was the first cohort to graduate that received all of the wraparound supports. I believe it was like a 7-point jump in graduation, which is huge. I should also say that there's many factors that go into that, so it's not just because of the wraparound supports. New York State also changed some of the cut scores, and they gave districts more autonomy to offer multiple pathways to graduation. The Syracuse City School District has also been innovative and really a leader in the state in CTE programs and giving students multiple pathways to get there. So the second part, that's the long answer to your first part. The second part of your question is yes, and I'm glad you said that. There is an income limit. So when we started going to our private partner colleges, they were all on. First, we discussed with them how students are being supported in Syracuse. And what piqued all of our private partner colleges' interest is not so much student performance It was more so student grit and resilience. They want to know that a student that comes to their campus may struggle for a semester, but that they're going to persist, that they will continue to go. So all of them except for Syracuse University say, okay, great. You know, you guys are doing great things with your students. If they come here, we know we'll have a good student. But, you know, if a student can afford to pay, then we want them to put some skin in the game. So we have an income limit. The income for all schools except for Syracuse University is the family income is $75,000 or more. The student, they don't get the tuition guarantee. And the other part about that is at all of the private schools, the tuition is guaranteed by institutional funds. So a student that goes to Syracuse University, when they get that tuition guarantee, it comes from Syracuse University funds. If they go to Clarkson, if they go to RIT, they get the institutional funds. The only other institution that whose income limit is different is the University of Rochester. Their income is $100,000 rather than $75,000.
There's no income limit. It's really the private colleges.
So,
and just to re-emphasize, Syracuse University doesn't have that income limit. And the vast preponderance of the kids actually go to the SUNYs, half of them through the community college system.
Indeed. So the I'll get to you in just a second. For students that go to all the public schools, that money does come from the endowment, the local endowment. And you know, I explained where last dollar scholarship. But for the privates, when they go to a private school, the funds that guarantee tuition come from the private institution.
You graduated from Nottingham. Did you have 3 years in schools in the city? And were you one of the early members of the program? But I have another question that's
okay.
A real one. Go ahead.
I was born in 77. I graduated 95. I wish I was able to take advantage of this, but no. No, unfortunately.
Do you have data on the number of students that you put into college through your system? And do you know what percentage of those people graduated? And can you compare that to the number of people that usually go to the college and what percentage of those graduate in 4 or 5 years?
Indeed. So to date, I would be remiss in saying it's 2019. In 2009, we supported our first cohort of students to go to college. So it's been 10 years. To date, over 4,200 students have gone on to college. The data on college graduation gets a little bit more tricky. So I could tell you we have a high percentage of students that have completed 4 years. What I will tell you is not just local, but a national trend is for over half of students, actually over 60% of students that attend college, it takes them more than 100% of the time to complete a degree. Actually, it takes 150 to 200%, which means it takes 5 to 6 years to complete a degree program. With us, looking at graduation, we track students for 4 years. When they sign up with us, they sign a FERPA release, that's Family Education Rights Privacy Act. We can track them. After their eligibility has expired with us for 4 years, the colleges don't have to report that. We request the information, but it, you know, can sometimes be incomplete. So what I can tell you is that the number of students that have completed 4 years is very high, and the data suggests that if you complete 4 years, you're more likely to complete your degree program. What I could also tell you is that over the past 3 to 4 years, our persistent rates have been higher than the national average. And we measure persistence by first year to second year. So this past year, our persistence at a public school was 88%, and our persistence at a private school was 85%. The national averages for those are both in the lower 80s. What I could also tell you is the resilience of our students, when you look at dropout rates over the last 5 to 6 years have dropped by double digits. And more students are graduating, which means more students are going to college, but our persistence has been pretty static. So the gyrations haven't been like 1 year, a lot of students persisted, and next year, you know, it's been pretty clean.
Do you track the students who stay in Syracuse and, you know, that...
After they graduate?
After they graduate, right.
We don't. What I will tell you is that the residency requirement is at the time of graduation and at the time they enroll. We do have students. That residency requirement perhaps may be relaxed somewhat, because what we found really since 2009 is that students that are, so let me go back. So we have the tuition guarantee. We also have a grant called an opportunity grant. And the opportunity grant, so in New York State, tuition is really low. This year, tuition is $7,070. If you get the maximum federal grant, which is a Pell Grant, that's $6,195. And if you're in New York State, the maximum TAP grant is going to be about $5,900. So there are students that get the cost of tuition covered through federal grants and state grants. We have something called an opportunity grant. So that is, if you're going to a SUNY school and you live on campus, we know that room and board is not cheap. And so the opportunity grant is $2,000. You can use that towards room and board, books and fees, things of that nature. With our residency requirement, what we found is that particularly like students in Buffalo and students in Oswego get together, 10 people to an apartment or something like that, and they try to draw down the cost of attendance for that school. And rather than penalize them in saying, well, you have to live on campus, which is going to ultimately cost them more, we say if it's campus-affiliated housing, or if you can show proof of residence, which could be a leasing agreement or something like that, you can still get the opportunity grant. But no, we haven't been tracking which of those come back. That's something that we can work on.
I've got a question back here.
Hi, I'm Brian Fay from the Syracuse Community Center Collaborative, and Say Yes is one of the many reasons we stayed in Syracuse with our two daughters. We have a daughter, our daughter is at SUNY Brockport, and I was wondering, is there any movement to make the process a little less opaque? We're 50 days into school. I still haven't heard anything about, you know, what she's going to receive. We received Excelsior word immediately. But nothing, and your office has been great about corresponding with us, but, you know, SUNY Brockport has no idea what's going on. There's no portal at Say Yes where we can log in with her name. Is there movement toward that kind of things? Because I can access everything at SUNY Brockport. That's gotcha. Easy. Is there anything like that coming down the pike for you?
There is. There's a system that we've been working on. It's called eScholarship. We've actually been working on this thing for a couple of years, and we're close. What this system, when it's fully functional, there's just a lot of, you know, there's I wish there was like a programming person in here. There's a lot of data. When the data goes into the system, it has to be precise. So we're finalizing that. I think we'll launch it next year, but the platform is designed to give access to students, access to our college partners, and access to the community foundation. So when we request information, right now the way we request information, we send each of our college partners a roster. Then we, you know, we have an online certification, so we screenshot each of their electronic signatures to show that we have a FERPA release. They go in and one by one give us all the student information, and there's a lot of information that we ask for. And then we get that information and we go in one by one and develop awards for each student. And then there's checks and balances, so that passes through our local office and goes to our national office, and then the national office sends it back to our local office, and then we send it. I mean, there's a whole process involved. It's been a couple of years. I'm like 85 to 90% sure this platform will be up So that will, for our college partners, they'll be able to see information in real time because it's automated. So when they put that student's information in there, boom, the Say Yes Award comes up right there. Our disbursement process may or may not change. We like to wait until what is called the census date to start awarding students, because prior to the census date, especially at two-year schools, information changes. A student can be enrolled full-time in August and then part-time in September, or a student could be enrolled in July and then decide they're not gonna go. So we like to wait until we know for sure when those schools report that they're actually enrolled. But as far as communication goes, that platform will be, it's gonna be way better than it is now.
With regards to income limits on separated parents or divorced, which do you go by, the person who's claiming the dependent or who the student lives with?
We actually go by what they report on their FAFSA application. So, you know, I couldn't tell you all the nuances to FAFSA. What I can say is for students that have separated parents, and I think in all cases, the FAFSA looks at both incomes. And I can tell you for certain in some cases, let's say students' parents are separated and they're both married, they will look at combined income for mom and partner, and they'll look at combined income for dad and partner. But as far as we go, we get that information from their FAFSA application. The colleges report that to us.
Because you had a situation where the non-custodial parent has nothing to do and refuses to help at all, and in living with the other parent, you understand what I mean?
Yes.
Very
yes,
low
yes.
income.
We understand that. Actually, Tila, I will say we work with students who have a parent that refuses to give information to the FAFSA application, and we just find ways to work through and work around that. Mainly we partner with On Point for College, and they help students figure that stuff out.
Can you hit on some of the requirements to be eligible after you sign up and maybe take a gap year?
Talking about the student responsibilities?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, so imagine this. Imagine I come to you and I say, I'm really hungry and I don't have any money for the week. Could you give me money? And you give me $100 and you say, all right, go on and eat for this week. $100 is actually a lot for a week. I could do peanut butter and jelly, but $100. And then you see me the next day and I have on a brand new fancy tie. So if it were me, I would be like, I just gave you $100, you got a new tie. For us, when the partners came together, we want the money. We don't want to give bad scholarships. So there are student responsibilities. Kind of like the Excelsior Scholarship, but not as rigorous. Students have to be enrolled full time. That's kind of automatic because in order to get funds, you have to be enrolled full time, right? In order to get federal funds, state funds, you have to be enrolled full time. The other thing for us is you have to have at least a semester 2.0 GPA or better. So why do we say semester rather than cumulative? First of all, let me go through all of the eligibility requirements and I'm gonna come back to that. So you have to be enrolled full time, you have to have a semester 2.0 or better, that's it. So we say a semester 2.0 GPA or better. So this is what happens. Say a student goes, they enroll full time, but they don't complete full time status, or their GPA is below 2.0 or both. With us, you don't lose the scholarship. We put you on what is called a probationary status, where the next semester you will continue to get our award. And that's the time that you can regain or improve your, you know, regain your eligibility. So we do that because, that first semester or whatever semester it is, a student can have a bad one. And if you have a bad one and your GPA is below a 2.0 and then you perform well and your GPA is above a 2.0 the next semester, your cumulative could still be below a 2.0. And trust me, it's hard to get out the hole. If you have a bad one, it's hard. It's very difficult. So for us, we do record the cumulative GPA. We do request that information. But for eligibility purposes, we look at semester by semester. Because the whole point of this thing is that we want to support students. We want to give them opportunities. I can tell you with Excelsior, they have student requirements. And once it's gone, it's gone. If you don't meet those student requirements, there's no probationary period. You can't get it back. It's gone. Thanks.
Can you talk about, like, if you take a year off and come back and just reporting back to say, because I think that's important. I know that a lot of the students that I found not eligible after some time, it's because of that, not understanding that they have to notify CAS and let them know what school they're at, and that you can take a year off and then come back, but not, no longer than that. And so I think that a lot of times I find that a lot of students get confused.
Don't really
that.
Understand that. Yeah. So for you all's purposes, yes. So we have something called a gap year policy. It's really, we've been using it. The gap year policy is, and I did this, but at the time you graduate, you have up to a year from the time you graduate to enroll in a college. So this year's graduating class, 2020, will have till 2021 to enroll in a college. We have taken that gap year policy and applied it towards students. Students sometimes have to take a medical leave of absence. Students sometimes have to, they take a semester off or they take a year off for whatever reason. We've applied that gap policy towards students in those type of situations too. When they do that, they have to, they have to demonstrate that there's an extenuating circumstance or something like that. And if they graduate from high school and they enroll in the prior year, they don't have to demonstrate anything. They just took a year off. My suggestion is I did it. I took a year off. It worked for me, but by the grace of God, for students, I would say you should probably just go straight to college.
All right, we have time for one more question back here.
Oh, man, I'll be around.
So drawing on your analogy of throwing the fish back into the sick lake,
yeah,
I can't help but think about, proposals we've been hearing about free public college or universal access to health care or criminal justice reform. So, what CAS has put together with all the partners is really impressive, but just your hot take on kind of the replicability or scalability of an effort like this to address needs in Rochester and Albany and Binghamton and all the other cities across the country.
So there is a movement towards free public colleges. There are promise programs all over the country that guarantee tuition and are looking at how to scale that in their respective communities. It really looks different all over everywhere. What is the term? Think globally, act locally. So, I guess my limited expertise would say it really depends on the community and how they want to support and what they want to do in their respective community.
All right, please join me in thanking Amede Turner.